Blog Talk Radio.
So y'all was in Iraq together?
Yeah, we was in Iraq.
What did you do?
We was looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Did you ever find them?
You know goddamn well we ain't find them. What are you, some kind of political humorist? You Gary Trudeau up in this bitch?
I was looking for bitches, but they had that carpet shit all over them, and I couldn't see what they looked like. All that was really exposed was the eyes, and that wasn't enough for me, because, you know, I'm looking at the eyes can be pretty, and I take that carpet off, and then I got a tragedy.
Well, no, we ain't fine. But I always say the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence.
What?
Simply because you don't have evidence that something does exist does not mean that you have evidence that something doesn't exist.
What?
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English in what?
What?
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Yeah.
So you understand the words I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is that there are known knowns and that there are known unknowns, but there's also unknown unknowns. Things we don't know that we don't know.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more time?
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, and once again, good evening, folks. This is the Grindhouse edition of Afternerd Radio. The Comic Shop is up first, and of course, Afternerd Radio is up second, batting second. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Folks, we have a fully packed, functional show. Of course, my cohorts, Daryl B., and of course, the indefatigable Captain Kirk, they're in attendance. We all have something to say. We all have something to say about The Wolverine, which was just released yesterday, folks. I assume it's going to make its money. Oh, yes, indeed. Marvel's bank account is always going to be flush, trust me. However, we all have disparate opinions, different opinions, so we'll get into it, folks. To keep things close to the cuff, to keep things making sense, We noticed that there was the appearance of the villainous, the Viper in The Wolverine. So in homage to the Viper, let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, and it's called Rat Viper. Rat Viper by The Word Burglar. We'll be back in a few moments, and again, let's groove.
Around the globe, and you know I give them hell.
All right, enough of that. Once again, that was the word burglar, Rat Viper. Folks, the Wolverine time. We've got to discuss it. The call-in number, if you'd like to join us, is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. And again, welcome to the Grindhouse, the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio. This is the Comic Shop, and we are open for business. First up, Captain Kirk. Let's get to it, Captain.
Yes, sir. Let's begin.
And then there's, well, you know, Daryl.
Hollywood, you were so close, but we'll get into that in a second.
Yes, gentlemen. We've got to talk about the Wolverine. Just opened up this weekend. I suspect it's going to make its money. It really wasn't that expensive when you compare it to other films of this type. I think they're putting the budget at anywhere between $115 and $130 million. From what I saw looking at this film today, I saw it just for our audience. I saw it at the 11 o'clock show, so it's fresh in my mind. And I'll start it off first. Again, folks, this is The Wolverine. This is the second outing for Hugh Jackman as a solo act with this film. The sixth time he's portrayed the character, but the second time as far as his solo effort. I'm going to say I liked the film begrudgingly. There were some issues, but for the most part, as far as how it looked visually, using Japan obviously as a backdrop, referencing the Wolverine limited series from 1982, the Chris Claremont, Frank Miller interpretation of the character, this is where this movie is how that bounces off of that book. In other words, that book, elements of the book were definitely seen in this particular iteration of the character. Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. He knows the character intimately. He knows what he needs to look like. We know of his infamous training program. He was ripped. He is the Wolverine, so I have no complaints with him. I guess I had a sour taste in my mouth, and I saw this movie reluctantly. I'm glad I did see it, but I wasn't as hyped up about it as I really would normally be. When the great director, not James Mangold. James Mangold is the character is the director now. Darren Aronofsky. When Darren Aronofsky left this film before it came out, I said, "Okay, it's done." Aronofsky, you know him from The Fighter. You know him from The Wrestler. He is he has the gravitas now. We know that he's a real filmmaker. So you're thinking, okay, you have an Oscar-caliber filmmaker approaching a comic book movie. So I was like, okay, this movie was probably one of the films I was really looking most forward to because of his involvement. When he left, now from my understanding, he left because of family issues. He's a young father. He was involved with the actress Rachel Weisz. He was involved with her for 10 years. Not to get all in the man's business, but he's involved with Weisz for 10 years. And then a year later, she gets married to James Bond, Daniel Craig. So whatever was going on in his personal life, and then Japan had a tsunami, I suspect there was a intersection of problems, and he left the film. So now we have James Mangold taking up the helm of this film. Again, I liked it begrudgingly. A lot of nods to the Wolverine limited series. I thought that his love interest in the movie, who played Mariko, I thought she, first of all, she's not hard on the eyes. And she played it. She was Mariko. I mean, the characters really some of the characters pretty much look the way they're supposed to look. I guess my problem is that it starts off really good. It starts off pretty serious. The fighting scenes were adequate, or even beyond adequate, except we have to appease the kiddies, ladies and gentlemen. We have to appease them. The Wolverine is a violent character, and I would have liked to have seen some limbs taken apart. I mean, you know, a person has adamantium claws, can rip through anything. He has an adamantium skeleton. So they still kept the violence, even though it looked good, it really wasn't as gory as it logically should have been. And towards the end, not to give away a lot of the movie because we want the audience to see it, check it out for yourself. Towards the end, it started getting into comic book hokum. It got hokey towards the end. Not going to get too detailed at what happened towards the end, but the end battle, which is within itself hokey, the end battle and the major reveal, it's just hokey. I really would be surprised at if Aronofsky was still helming this film, if that stuff would have still been in there. Someone who did The Fighter, someone who did The Wrestler. I mean, heck, his wrestler is the reason why Mickey Rourke came back in the fold and ended up getting Iron Man 2. I just thought this thing was on a downward spiral from his exit. Having said that, the film visually was great. It has some problems. I'll go deeper into it. I'm going to pass the mic to Daryl B. Daryl B., what's your impressions of The Wolverine?
I liked it more than you did, but a lot of our problems are the same with this. The reason why I said Hollywood, you were so close. I wasn't a fan of the Claremont Miller Wolverine Limited, but I was a big fan of the 90s Wolverine books, where they explored his dealings in Japan, where they explored Mariko's thing, where they went more in depth to Yukio, and all of that was touched here. So I'm like sitting in the theater, and I'm like, yo, this is pretty good. I may for once give a movie like a 10. I'm like right there. I'm loving the inner monologues, you know. I'm loving all of that. You know, I'm even loving how much they made the surprise X character that shows up. And folks, not to give it away, but you're gonna have to see the movie. You know, other people can spoil it for you. I won't spoil, but I'm liking how that method was used. You know, and I have as I told Alpha Nerd behind the scenes, my new poster, instead of Kitty Pryde saying Professor X is a jerk, would be the Hugh Jackman Wolverine saying this character is a jerk for how often it appears to bring him down. But then the last 20 minutes of this movie took me from a 10 to a 7.58, and I'm being generous because, like I said, my first time looking at these, I try to keep the comic brain out, but it is so mind-numbingly stupid, the last 20 minutes of this film. I mean, you had a great setup with him walking through the town trying to get to the villain headquarters and facing the hand, we could actually call it for what it is, those assassins with a hand, those ninjas, you know, the Yakuza assassins, you know, trying to get there to rescue the girl he loves or likes, or we're not really clear on that. And from that point, the movie just went, phew. All right, things I like best about this movie, this is the first movie where I did not have a problem with any of the female major characters, all right? The woman that steals this movie is the woman that portrayed Yukio, you know, almost true to form to her comic book form, and her first appearances in the Uncanny X-Men book. Now, I mean, I was kind of hoping one of the cut scene at the end of this would be them landing in Westchester and she meeting Halle Berry Storm as a call-out to her friendship with Storm in the books. The Mariko character, almost perfect to her appearances in Wolverine and X-Men. Almost perfect. And I have to give it up to the woman that played Viper. I've never seen this Russian actress before, but she did menacing just well enough. And it's an unintentional crossover, too, because when you see Viper and he's dressed all in green and all of that, you know, you can't help but think Hydra. And Hydra appeared in the Captain America movie, so, you know, I look at it like that. But, I wish the last 20 minutes could be redone. And I think later on we're gonna talk about how we could redo that. And for folks that don't know, we're talking about Silver Samurai here. We can't give too much away about it, but we are talking about Silver Samurai, because that kind of ruined this film. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, there's some points that could definitely be corrected, and I think, as you just said, we'll talk about that. I just want to mention one other thing about the film before we pass the mic to the captain. The captain sends me an ominous tweet. He says it's garbage. I said, that's another thing, too. I have a great deal of respect for the captain's opinion, and he influences me when it comes to some of this stuff because I have to be honest. He understands my comic mind. Darryl, as I said, perhaps has more of a comic mind than I have. That's debatable, but let's say he has more of a comic mind than I have. We nerds are so emotionally connected to this material that sometimes we can't disengage ourselves from them, and we'll make ourselves like it. I know the captain knows what I'm talking about. We will like crap just because we finally get a chance to see Wolverine bouncing around the screen with his adamantium claws. So I have to fight my internal child. This, you know, because when I'm looking at the film, I admit this. I think I mentioned this to Darryl B earlier today. I said, no matter what I think about this film, the idea of what I read as a kid coming to life and being treated seriously, you know, this is the Marvel's House of Ideas. The fact that these stories, Steve Ditko, Stan Lee, all these guys that put these simple stories, you know, if you go to the Silver Age, you think of characters like Iron Man and Spider-Man, their stories were told in a few panels, which is amazing within itself. The fact that we live in a time now with the technology for these characters to come to life and for their stories, which were told, honestly, back in the 60s, they were told the origin stories were about five to ten pages long, if that long. So within 5 or 10 pages, you're getting these multi-billion-dollar franchises 30, 40, 50 years later. So I always have to take myself back and say, wow, this Wolverine is Wolverine. It's very childlike for me when I look at these films, but he's the one that will tell you honestly, that's garbage. Oh, that's an 8. That's a 6. He's very strict on that. So I'm going to pass the mic to him. We'll chop it up even further. Captain, your opinion.
All right. Excuse me for being scientifically didactic. But then again, I take that back because I'm not speaking to the gormless, feral, menstrual beast. I'm speaking to the geek crowd who can do all that great stuff because geeks run the world. Now, here's been my problem with Wolverine since the inception at the theatrical, not the comic book, at the theatrical level, since he's had the adamantium skeleton. Now, the basis premise that all scientists know, this is something that scientists know, when they look at primates or when they look at Neanderthals, they look at the bones and then they say, look how robust their bones are. All scientists agree, even the ones that don't like each other because their egos are big. They say when your bones are stronger, you automatically develop, the muscles will develop more torque. This is one of the reasons why humans, compared to animals, are so powered down, we're weak. Among other reasons, there's other reasons too. That's one of the biggest main reasons. So Wolverine, because he has this special skeleton, automatically, his strength is going to be upgraded. Automatically. We've seen that in one of the movies. So even if you suppress, and I know there's elements of the book, of course, but even if you suppress some of his mutant factors, he still has this skeleton that allows him to throw blows that a normal trained fighter is not going to be playing games. He's going to be playing games with. 3-4 guys is nothing. You understand? And this is a problem I've always had since from the time he had this skeleton. At the theatrical level, the comic book nails it. Anything with Wolverine, they nail it. That's a whole different thing. It's beastly. But now here's the thing with comics. When you're dealing with the theatrical level, they say that comic book story is actually easier to do. Why? Because it's built in the newest sphere already. So you go to the theater with your hands open. You're just saying, don't mess it up. That's what you're doing. Don't mess it up. That's all you're doing because you know the story. Most of these stories the people know already. They know these stories. Unless, of course, it was like Green Lantern. That's a whole other story. But they know these stories. All right? They know these stories. An original screenplay, you go into the theater with your hands folded, and they have to impress you. So original screenplay is a lot harder to do than a superhero story. All you have to do, even based on what Afro Nerd said, because there's a lot of emotion going in already, is not mess it up. And that blinds you a lot of times. Emotion, remember what I said before many times, limbic system and how you think. So, that being said, when you're looking at this Wolverine, you have the A-list actor, and it's not Hugh Jackman's fault. It's not Hugh Jackman. You have to come with the A-list script, and then you have to do something that's very hard to do, apparently, in my opinion, is very hard to do. Capture the comic book element of Wolverine on the screen and not mess it up. And in my opinion, except when he's with the X-Men, I think that's a better version of him than when I see in these little movies that he's doing separately. When he's with the X-Men, it's a bit better. He's all right. Still not there. Still not captured. But on the screen, one-on-one, no. I got a big problem with it, man. I'm watching the fight scenes. And yes, he's powered down and everything else. I'm being nice now. Normally, I do spoilers. Normally, I say, I take a line from Daryl, it sucks to be you. But this time, I won't do that. You understand? I won't do that this time. I won't do the spoilers. But I'll say a little something. He's powered down. You have the Andantium skeleton. He's still going to bust you up. This is Wolverine, man. Powered down or not, man. You a regular human. Get out of here, man. Big problem for me. Huge problem for me. I had that problem from the beginning. That's something that totally turned me off. I didn't care for the fight scenes. I didn't care for the fight scenes at all. I had an issue with it. And I don't think that they've been able, and it's something also Afro Nerd said, you got to remember the kiddies and everything is there. That has bothered me. They don't capture them. I don't feel they capture Wolverine at all. You read that comic book, you go, oh, my God, I got to read this again. This story was the best. Wolverine is a savage individual, powered down or powered up, any which way you want to do it, and he's not captured, in my opinion. So I didn't care for the movie at all. I didn't care for it at all. You know, I sat there, ate my popcorn and everything else, and it was like, I just had a problem with that. I just had a total problem with it. It totally turned me off because in my mind, that's not really Wolverine. That's elements. Hugh Jackman looks the part, and it's not Hugh Jackman's fault, I should say. It's not his fault. He looks the part. Looks beautiful. He's in shape and everything else. Great. It's a good thing, but I just have a problem with that. It bothers me to no end. Back up with you, sir, Afro Nerd.
Wait, Afro Nerd, before you go in, the only time where they actually showed what Captain Kirk was talking about was the train fight scene. When the thugs confront him in the train, the first guy tries to punch Wolverine in the head, and you hear the clang sound and you hear his bones break. I was like, yeah. But for the rest of that, he's getting hit normally. So I could get what the captain's talking about there. Go ahead, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I'm going to say, again, he everyone's entitled to their opinion, obviously. He disliked the film more than Daryl and myself. For the most part, I had a good time looking at the film, for the most part. It's just certain things that kept it from being what it should have been. And I'm going to repeat this again. Darren Aronofsky, who seems to have a penchant for the underdog, he's made films where you're seeing you're seeing the titular character, or you're seeing the main character overcome adversity, going through a lot of pain. That is the Wolverine. The Wolverine is a tortured soul that is immortal. And that would be right up Aronofsky's lane. I just think that his gravitas attached to a superhero film would have done wonders for the Wolverine. Would have been something. When James Mangold gets on top of this, not to disparage him so much, some folks just have a certain attitude about, well, this is a comic book, and they don't understand that it's more than a comic book now. I mean, if we have enough time, there's a topic we wanted to get into about Image Comics, the great comic book company that's not the big two, DC and Marvel. Image is gaining ground in doing non-superhero stories. Now, The Walking Dead is an Image book. Now, there's another book that's coming out called The Clone. The Clone has also been opted for television, if I'm understanding it correctly. So they're really gaining ground on just doing stories. Folks may think that when you come to the comic shop, and for the most part, we do heavily talk about superheroes. But the reality is that if you walk into a comic shop today, at least half the books are not superhero themed. So if you have an Aronofsky on top of a superhero theme who's done straight cinema, I mean, really great straight cinema, this movie should have been mint, and it wasn't. And something else, and I'm going to pass it back to Daryl, something else that bothered me is that when you see the opening and closing credits, you see Marvel Entertainment emblazoned in the credits. Marvel Entertainment. So for legal reasons, they have to mention Marvel Entertainment. But for those who are not in the know, these characters, these Marvel-based characters, all of them should really be together. They should cross paths at some point. Captain America should cross paths with Wolverine, especially in World War II. Especially in World War II. You know, Spider-Man is in New York. Spider-Man should have been right there with the Avengers in the first Avengers film. But because of some of these properties having been sold by Marvel to different movie houses, the legal eagles will not allow some of these characters to interconnect, because they're under different movie houses. So Fox has the FF, they have the Fantastic Four, and they have the X-Men. And by connection, they have Silver Surfer and Doctor Doom, if you want to get into that. With Spider-Man, he's under Sony. So now, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment, we spoke before that Hugh Jackman himself said, and he loved the character, he said, you know, something is missing. I mean, you can't have these characters comfortably operating in the same universe. Now we're hearing that Mark Webb, who's the director of The Amazing Spider-Man, and the great Joss Whedon, who is the director of The Avengers and from Buffy fame, these guys have weighed in and said, yeah, we need to do something. So that's something that really hurts these films also. I think if Marvel had more influence with these films, it would have been better. That's just my opinion. Daryl?
Hey, we all wish for, just like on the DC side, we wish that, yo, you could show a little bit from other universes, not long. It doesn't have to be so it takes over the film, but you could show connected. And, you know, every geek wants that. Every nerd wants that. Every comic aficionado wants that. That larger on-screen connective tissue. Sort of like in Predator 2, where you saw the alien head on the spaceship. Sort of like, was it Indiana Jones, where they showed the aliens and it looked like the aliens from Close Encounters? You know, it's sort of like that, where, oh, there's the big fight happening, and wait, is that Peter Parker taking photographs? Oh, it's Peter Parker taking photographs, you know? Something to get us. Oh, that's why I mentioned the Viper Hydra connection, because unintentionally they did that with that. Where you could say, hey, we know Logan and Steve Rogers have history back to World War II? Possibly, maybe. That's stretching. That's hoping. But there's nothing tangible on screen. I'm going to have to delve into spoiler room here. Even on the cut scene, where a certain industries is mentioned, okay, you could have salvaged the Silver Samurai by saying that that industry connected with Yoshida Technological, producing the future, something like that, where you could have interconnective tissue in the same movie, you know, something to redeem it. You know, when we watch these, I make joke about it where I have to watch it first with my comic book brain out and then watch it with the comic book brain in, and then you combine the two, and that's how I would rate the movie. You know, I get with what the captain says, how he wants the Wolverine fights to go. Can they do it on screen? Of course they can. I get what Afro-Nerd says, and how he wants the fight to look to go. Can they do it on screen? Yes, but we are going to get an R-rated movie. And unfortunately, they have kiddified this so much to lure the kids, to lure the teenagers in, you know, the younger teenagers, the older teenagers, Wolverine with blood dripping from his claws, guys breaking limbs on his head. Yeah, we're all in for that. It's just... It won't be feasible, and there's so much legal speak and stuff that's getting into it. You kind of wish that the creators would get amongst themselves and do it, but we know that would never happen to give us the ultimate comic book movie. Such a thing does not exist. Not everybody's going to be happy now. We wish we could be, but it won't happen. Afro-Nerd, back to you.
Okay, let's go to a quick musical break, folks. Again, we're talking about the Wolverine. After this musical break, let's segue into who we think would make a good Batman. Because that's all over the internet right now, folks. You just Google which actor. You don't even have to complete the sentence, which I find it very funny. If you Google
it just
and start putting
Batman.
In, yeah, which actor should play Batman? It comes up automatically. So we'll talk about it. First up, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. This is MC Frontalot, Good Old Clyde. Good Old Clyde, we'll be right back. And again, let's groove.
And that's how all the trouble started.
Okay, folks, we're back once again. This is the Grindhouse, The comic shop is open for business, the business of discourse, pulp discourse, that is. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. That was MC Frontalot, good old Clyde. Just a quick aside, ladies and gentlemen, I thought that's a pretty interesting cut because it is a nerdcore song, and in true nerdcore form, the song is an ode, an homage to Clyde Stubblefield, and some will say, well, who the hell is that? Well, he's a legendary drummer responsible for the funky drummer beat from the James Brown song that's been sampled to death. Sampled to death in hip-hop mythology. So because nerds analyze everything, this MC Frontalot gave a shout-out to the infamous funky drummer, because without it, I don't know if hip-hop would be the same. That funky drummer beat has been used to death, and even in pop music, not even hip-hop music. Anyway, just a little bit of hip-hop nerdcore history. All right, getting back into the fold, folks. Still talking about comic books, sort of. Let's talk about the Man of Steel. Oh, actually, I'm hearing some background chatter. Is that someone moving their paper around or something? Is someone moving their mic around?
No, not
right.
Me.
No. All right, I'm hearing something, background noise. All right.
What do you hear?
It's like someone's crumbling paper or something. Okay. No big, it's gone now. With the Batman Superman movie. I don't know what it's going to be called. Is it Batman versus Superman? I mean, I'm hearing that it's going to be that kind of thing initially. Whatever's going to happen. Now we're hearing more talk, more scrutiny, more theorizing on who should play Batman. Christian Bale has done such a great job. Oscar winner Christian Bale has done such a great job. It's going to be hard to really find someone to fill in the shoes to really get the essence of the character, because now they've made Superman darker. So now that Superman is darker, you can't have a lighter Batman. I don't see how that's going to work. And, you know, I guess the main thing is, who's going to get the pain? Who's going to get the physical prowess? Who's going to get the genius that is Bruce Wayne? Bruce Wayne would be considered somewhat of a OCD character, or perhaps a psychopath, a controlled psychopath, a genius. He's a hero, but he's got issues. Who is best able to embody that? I thought of Christian Bale, because way before they had, when you heard who was going to play Batman in Batman Begins, I knew this guy, and I recommended only he could do it, because of his portrayal of the serial killer in American Psycho, and because of his gun kata, or gun fu, in Equilibrium. Between Equilibrium and American Psycho, those two portrayals led me to believe this is the man for Batman. I don't know who you're going to get this time around. They're talking about Ryan Gosling. All kinds of names are coming out. So, Daryl, who have you heard might be up for consideration for the role?
It's
who
funny
do you like?
Well, it's funny because I personally wanted to skew a little bit older, and I wanted to go Cole Hauser, the actor who did Paparazzi, where he was an actor whose family gets hurt, and he goes on a Punisher's type vengeance spree against the paparazzi responsible, all right? And he was also the villain in Too Fast, Too Furious. He's been in a lot of B-movies, you know, like that. He's not an A-list actor. Like me, I was going to go off-grid. And then the other night, I'm watching with my mom, my dad, my sister, we're watching Star Trek, the remake. And my mom just blurts out, "You know who would be good for Batman? That guy right there." And I go like, "Chris Pine? No. Captain Kirk cannot be Batman." And she's like, "No, not him. That one." Points to the screen again and points at Carl Urban, a.k.a. McCoy. who just did Judge Dredd, no stranger. He has the voice to it. And I'm like, oh, my mom actually just picked the guy who would be good as Batman. This is weird. And then I go in Friday into my comic book dealer, Donna, and she says Carl Urban, too. I'm flabbergasted that both of them would channel that way, but you know what? When looking at Carl Urban and looking at what Carl Urban's done, he's closer to that than what I had in Cole Hauser. I mean, a lot of the actors I would love to see in the role would not get the chance at it just because, you know, between TV and stage, you know, there's certain stereotypes, certain prejudices there. But it's obvious. You need someone that could stand up with Henry Cavill and share scenes and you don't feel would be back away from him. You know, and that's what's needed here. Bale would do that, but the problem is Bale making that voice to Superman, you and Superman would both go, come on, man, I know it's Bruce Wayne under the mask. Stop with the voice, you know, like that. You need a guy who could naturally do it and doesn't seem like he's putting much effort into it. That's just me. Cap?
Here's the thing. Being that we're dealing with these individuals, DC individuals, before I can pick an actor, I have to know the long-term plan. What exactly are you trying to do with this movie? Is this movie the setup for the JLA, as some people are talking about? What exactly is going on? When I have all that information, then I can make a better choice. You see what I'm saying? Because it's supposed to be in a different universe and everything else. So, you know, my first choice really is? Take Christian Bale in the back room, smack him up a bit, and say, stop being a prissy Pringle, and take $50 million and just do the role, man, and stop playing games. That's my attitude going in. You understand? So then everything is null and void. It's null and void. It's not a problem. But see, since we don't have that, that's not taking place as of yet. You never know. Down the line, it might just take place. Things have a way of changing. I have to know what exactly is the plan, you know, 4 years in advance. Then I can turn around and say, okay, this movie is going to lead into this. This is the plan. Give me this guy. But without me knowing that, I'm just throwing things in the air. I don't like to just take shots in the dark. You know, I need to know that information. You know, I can pick anybody. You know, does that mean it's, is that going to work? Because what direction are they? Do they really plan on going with it? What universe? It's supposed to be in a different universe. That much we do know. So I'm at this given point, put it this way, I'm befuddled. I really don't want to pick anybody and throw a name out because I don't know what these guys are doing at this given point. It's nice to talk about it, but I'm being totally real at this given point. Back over to you, Sir Aphelnerd.
Well, I'm going to throw some names out because I'm seeing more and more folks that are doing it and they're breaking it down. I mean, it just goes to show you, once again, how emotionally connected the fans are to these characters. And they will pick and prod and really analyze and super analyze and analyze again who they believe is the best guy to do the role. Now, some names that have been put out there, one is a guy named I know him from Teen Wolf, from Tyler Hoechlin, who plays Derek, the alpha werewolf. And, many people do not know this character, do not know him. We don't know what he's able to do. His name is being tossed around a little bit, but he's on an MTV show that is, you know, I like the TV show, but it's TV. It's TV and it's MTV. So we don't know really what this guy's chops are. But he does look like Bruce Wayne. And he's young enough and he's physical enough and he plays a werewolf where you know he's able to get into a little bit of the ferocity and the darkness to play Batman. The only thing is I don't know what the guy's chops are. So his name is being heavily considered. You know,
who's that? Armie Hammer?
No. Armie Hammer is also being considered, but Armie Hammer is attached to the Lone Ranger, which is a flop. See, some of these guys that are attached to flops, they're not going to be able to do it. But no, he's in the MTV series, and we only know him from that. And he does look like Bruce Wayne. I'll give him that. He has kind of a rough edge to him, but it's a hokey, schlocky TV series, Teen Wolf. So we don't know. But at the same time, you got to give guys opportunities. I don't know what he's capable of. Now, I'll tell you somebody who I like, who I would be very comfortable in this role. The only problem is he's attached to Marvel properties. But he's a damn good actor. And he might rival Bale. Michael Fassbender. Magneto himself. Let's keep it real. This guy might be the Bruce Wayne we need. Because he's very suave. He can be dark. He's played Magneto. You know, he's got it. That guy's got it. I can see him in the role.
And that would be the power play Warner Brothers would need to steal some of the momentum out of from Marvel, you know? Go drive up with a thing full of money right up to Fassbender's door and go like, yeah, we want you to be Batman.
This guy is suave enough. He's young enough. He's like in his mid-30s. He's like 36, 37. He can do the role. Let's see what he can do when he pounds some weights out. He's got the acting chops. He's been connected with some very, very, very dramatic roles, hardcore dramatic roles. Sergio Mims knows about Fassbender because of his work with Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen, the director, the Afro-Brit director, not the Caucasian Hollywood icon. Another Steve McQueen. So I think Fassbender. Now Ryan Gosling has been put out there, but people say, you know, he's a good actor, damn good actor, but he is. That's what they say online. His voice is too effeminate. He's too light in the voice, man. He's got to be dark and have a dark, commanding, threatening look. Fassbender looks like the type of guy that you don't want to mess around with. He knows how to pull that off. So I'm comfortable with him. Armie Hammer, like you said, Lone Ranger flop, too many flops. The actor that played in John Carter, I forgot his name, but they brought his name up, but he's attached to too many flops. Too many flops, they don't want that stink. I'm going for Fassbender. I just have that in my head. If there isn't a non-complete clause with Marvel and DC, that's what I'm curious about. Now, we have some calls, so let's go to the calls. We've got about 11 minutes remaining, so see now... It's getting hot in here because we're talking about.
There we go.
You know, this is how it goes. All right, 234. Welcome to the comic shop. And cut your
caller, you have to turn your radio down.
Turn your radio down. All right, let's go to somebody else. All right, 703. Welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Spice for Life. Hey, guys, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
Hey, they just announced who's going to be Batman. It just came over the internet. It's going to be Denzel Washington.
Hey, you know what? In the same vein, hey, Idris Elba is doing everything, you know? Idris Elba is Bruce Wayne.
Oh, this hey, you know name what I has think? Been thrown out there. Believe it or not, his,
you know
name,
what I
his
think?
Name's been thrown out there.
One, they're going to go for unknown because they can bring him in cheap. And my only thing is I hope he's an American. I mean, I don't have any, you know, I just can't buy that no American actor can pull off a superhero movie. You know, the big three, the last few, have all been Brits. You know, I mean, I don't know if, you know, I can't say, you know, I know a lot of British actors tend to come from stage, but you can't tell me we can get a good American actor to play Bruce Wayne.
You know what?
Maybe we can.
On that note, we have the same hope.
Plays the werewolf on True Blood, the main werewolf. I'm trying to find his name, but I can't quite find it. I would say Fassbender, but I don't think they're going to pull somebody from another comic franchise to head into a DC franchise. That's too. I don't think studios would want that. I think there'd be too much pushback. Even though Fassbender's an excellent actor, I don't think, like you said, Deeper, he's gonna have to hit the weights, and he might. It's like my only wild card. You guys gonna laugh me out the building? Daniel Day-Lewis.
Listen, he would have to play an older Batman, which is in line with the Batman Returns book, the Dark Knight Returns. It depends on how they're going to pull this off, because they may want it to be, you know, basically the same age bracket, because you want a JLA. Realistically, these guys want money. They're not about art. They want to be able to have these franchises go on for a decade at least. So you need somebody, you know, close to 30, maybe 35, who can pull off the character going into a 10 years. And they're not going to have that with someone who's pushing 50.
But where do you think they're going to go with the character? Do you think they're going to go with the Miller version, or are they just going to retell it and just, you know, just have individual episodes that aren't really age-specific?
Well, they're already hinting that they're going to have elements of the Frank Miller story in there. You're going to see it in there, but it's not going to be a direct interpretation. You're not going to have an older, grizzled mentioned this. Maybe even what's his name from Person of Interest? He plays with Batman. Caviezel would be an excellent Batman. He would be an excellent Batman. And also they've thrown in Matt Bomer from White Collar. He has the air and appearance and looks of a playboy, and he rattles off facts. You know, like a really he has a really amazing intellect that he displays, and a cunning that he displays in White Collar. But you know, to be honest with you, he came out a few years ago. Batman already has to fight that. Batman and Robin already has to fight that little gay inference. The people are trying to put that out there. I don't know if the fanboys will dig this guy's sexuality, even though that has nothing to do with the film. I don't know. And also, we haven't seen him be dark. I don't know how dark and how menacing that guy can be. I just know that Fassbender has shown that he can be menacing. We'll see. And now that he's out there, he's not going to be cheap either.
That is true. And the main thing here is DC and Warner Brothers acquired a lot of momentum from San Diego. It is important. It is imperative that they follow this up. They can't let this momentum die. If we're still asking this question at the end of September, prepping for New York Comic Con, we're still like pie in the eye. We don't know a director. We don't know the Batman actor. We don't know. We're still pre-treating a script. If we're still asking these questions about Batman, Superman by that time, then DC has dropped the ball. I think Captain agrees with that one, right?
One quick thing to our listening audience, to the folks in the chat room. Just want to just answer a couple of people. I see Black Ronin about Bomer. As I said, Bomer's sexuality. I'm not going to really go there, you know, because if you're going to be honest about it, what he does on screen has nothing to do with what he does off screen per se. But sometimes people are small minded. There might be an element because of the stuff that they try to say about Batman anyway. Might be. As far as him bulking up, I'm pretty sure he could do that because, Black, you know this. He was supposed to be the guy before Brandon Routh for the last Superman. So he was really supposed to be Superman, and this might be a good turnaround for him to be Batman. I think there's aspects of him that could do it, but I don't know about the hardcore. You know, you have to be kind of ferocious. I don't see that in him. Now, Black Achievement said Day-Lewis is too highbrow. I don't think so, because Fassbender's out there. You have you already have Academy Award winners affiliated with comic book properties now. Comic books are not what they used to be. They're getting A-list talent to do these movies. That's why they're doing as well as they're doing. Remember, you have Robert Downey Jr. as Iceman. Anthony Hopkins. Who plays What's her face? The mother Earth, his mother.
Rene Russo.
Yeah, Rene Russo. You have top flight talent now. It's not the same thing. This is not Cesar Romero. And even Cesar Romero was a real guy at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Cesar Romero was a real dude. He ended up doing goofy stuff in the 60s. You know, Burgess Meredith was a real actor before he became the Penguin and later in the Rocky films. So, you know, you never know how this is going to turn out. I'm more and more, as I'm thinking it through, I think I might want Fassbender on this one.
Like I said, that's the clue Warner Brothers needs to do. They need to steal some of Marvel's momentum. San Diego Comic-Con, that was a good start, but they need to follow it up. That sort of move shoots that cannonball right across Marvel Studios' bow. Like, yeah, we took him from you. Let's see what you got. You know,
I see that. I see that our friend Black Achievement might be joking. He says Alec Baldwin. Take off about 20 years.
No.
But you know what? Well, Alec Baldwin
as
might
Batman
be the guy.
Batman is Batman Beyond, maybe.
No, he's too young.
That's funny.
And you know what? They're talking about that too, Daryl. And as I deduced, I had said, I'm good at this stuff, I had said Clint Eastwood should play the 80-year-old Batman. And it looks, and people are putting his name out there. He would be excellent as Batman, sitting in the chair, giving instructions to the younger Batman. If they do a Batman Beyond, Clint Eastwood is the guy.
You know what? The McGinnis character, Boma Fitzmore, he could pull off the McGinnis character with Eastwood as his mentor, and you know, you get somebody like. I don't know who. Young black actresses to be the best friend. That's hard. Kerry Washington maybe to be his best friend, and roll with it from there.
You gotta have teenagers on this one. You're not gonna have like people in their 30s.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You need someone youngish enough. Megan Good? No, she's pretty old too. You know, but for Batman Beyond, that's going to take some chops.
Actually, since we talked, we got about 2 minutes. Since we spoke about Teen Wolf, you might have to have Tyler Posey to play the McGinnis character. You need someone that young.
Maybe.
I'm just saying.
Maybe.
All right, listen. Gentlemen, it's been real. We've got to go next door for Afternoon Radio. Daryl, on point as always.
Next week, I promise, we're going to do Beware the Batman, and unfortunately, we're going to do Avengers Assemble.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're going to go to Afternoon Radio. Thanks, Daryl. It's been real.
All right, man.
Spawn for the beard?
I think not.
Yes, sir. You've seen them.
Yes, sir, I've seen them. Yes, sir, I'm aware that they're all white. They're not from Portugal, they're from Spain. And at birth, they're not white. They're black. Sir,
I didn't know that. But they are from Portugal.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is the second act. Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio, folks. We have a lot to get into. It's just an hour. This is the Grindhouse Edition, the second half of the Grindhouse Edition. Feel free to give us a buzz. Give us your opinions, your questions, your protestations. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. We do what we always do, folks, to give you the best of urban alternative groove, black rock, afro-punk, which is coming up in about 3 weeks. I can't wait. Would you believe? I never thought that I would see the day that I would have conversations with Mr. Andre Simone, Prince's right-hand man, his former bassist. We're trying very hard, very, very hard to have him on the playlist at this year's Afro Punk Festival. So we've been tweeting each other, and he's been asking for information from me. Hey, help me out. Help me try to get on the roster. So I'm trying my best with working with some of the folks behind the scenes at Afropunk to get Mr. Simone to do his thing at this year's Afropunk. So stay tuned for that. Definitely one of my musical heroes. So I hope that he's able to attend this year's Afropunk. Okay, enough with me just tooting my own horn. Let's go to a quick groove. This is Blonde and Gold, the mashup. Blonde and Gold, and we'll be right back. Let's groove. Okay, folks, this is the Grindhouse, Afro Radio. That was a special mashup. I'm pretty sure you recognize Blondie, Deborah Harry. So, giving you the best of urban alternative groove. But before we get into more discourse, less music for the moment anyway, I've got to get my right-hand man involved, the great Captain. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it. You're needed on the bridge post-haste.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let's get it going. Let's get it going.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we've been putting this off for a minute. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I like the original song, but the mashup is great. Yeah. But listen, Captain, you know we have to do what we have to do. Some folks don't necessarily want to listen to Rihanna all day. I wouldn't mind looking at Rihanna all day, minus the pot smoke. But be that as it may, and she has nice feet, by the way, too. I noticed that. You know, I have a thing for that. She has nice feet. But
I got you started. Oh my gosh.
it doesn't take much. All right, folks. Again, Afronaut Radio. We've been, as you know, for those who've been on this ride for quite some time with us, for some reason I find it odd that there are other outlets, other shows that seem to be repeating the same theme. They never seem to have anything really to talk about, nothing to discuss. The Captain and I, we rattle off topics every day ad infinitum. There's always something to talk about. There's always information to disseminate, and yet, especially in urban radio, they do a piss-poor job. Pardon my French, but I'm practicing my parlez-vous français. They do a piss-poor job at really disseminating information. And we put too much out there. Sometimes we just don't have enough time to cover all this stuff. So we've been putting up Newton, K-N-E-W-T-O-N, and I want to just cover this for a few moments because I find it fascinating. I was looking at a Daily Beast article, an excellent blog, perhaps on the progressive end, which is fine. Folks think that because I wear the conservative label, and even that I might be couching that a little bit differently, maybe more libertarian than conservative, but that's for another day. Anyway, it is what it is. Anyway,
okay.
I do read various outlets, various newspapers, various online magazines. I look at Drudge, Drudge for Humor. The Drudge is out there, very, very biased. But then you could say MSNBC is biased. But I looked at the Daily Beast, and they had an excellent article about this computer software program entitled Newton. I love education. I love my favorite word, cognition. And I think that's, if there is a theme with this show, is I sincerely believe that many folk, irrespective of race, Captain, irrespective of race, they seem to be low in cognition, the ability to think. Heck, there's a book that I've been meaning to download. The author evades me right now, the name of the author, but it's a book that's about thinking. It's actually a book that teaches you how to think. So I'm very much into this kind of thing. So anyway, I'm looking at this Daily Beast article about Newton, and I thought that it's a fascinating thing that might change the way we learn, the way folks teach. And it's essentially a computer software program that is the brainchild of a gentleman, what's his name? Jose Ferreira, who was an executive with Kaplan. For those who have, for those who have degrees or, going for some special accreditation, you probably have heard of Kaplan. Kaplan, I've used Kaplan before myself. Kaplan is a business that's
really into test taking. Test practice, the business of practice, the practice of taking tests, if I'm making any sense there. Whether it's the MCAT, SAT, LSAT, he was a part of that. From my understanding, Mr. Pereira has a background in math. And many times when these guys, I believe he started off as an instructor and then somehow became an executive at Kaplan. But he knew his way around these tests. And I believe he cracked the code on, I think it might have been the MCAT or one of those tests. It might have been the GMAT, I believe. Anyway, this program deals with adaptive learning. It deals with literally calibrating, the software calibrating the test-taking apparatus in accordance to one's abilities. What does this mean? This means that it's a self-learning program. It allows students to better hone their strengths and also identify their weaknesses. And again, this is a software program. It's a computer program. And they're looking to implement this in many of the schools, and it's going to revolutionize how we learn. And also the fact that many schools have so many students nowadays. You know, one thing that hampers learning has a lot to do with just how many students are in the classroom. You're always going to opt out to do better if there's, let's say, under 20 kids, 15 kids. But now you have, or better yet, if you have a fortunate enough to have a private tutor, that's another thing. That's something that's off the map. But what's affecting many of these schools is that you just have too many students. But this program works on a different thing. So I wanted to shout this Newton program, K-N-E-W-T-O-N. You may want to check out the article. Just simply Google Newton, maybe Jose Pereira, the Daily Beast, and you'll learn more about this thing. But if you really get into what this means about adaptive learning and the program being able to literally guide the student and to measure the student in real time, being able to actually calibrate, okay, this is what's going on with him, really getting into the root of this person's abilities. The sky's the limit. And that's what we've always been dealing with. People learn at different paces. You can have 30 kids in a classroom. You have some kids that are picking up quickly and other kids that will pick it up in a slow manner. But it doesn't mean that the kids that are slower can't learn it. But if you have an adaptive program, it almost allows for everyone to be put on an equal distribution level. So I find it fascinating. So check out Newton. I've been wanting to mention this. And we'll see if this is incorporated in some of the urban centers, in some of the charter schools. Let's see what Newton can potentially be. And who will get access to Newton? That's what makes it pretty interesting as well. There's already venture capitalism involved in this. People are putting money into it. I think they put up upwards of $30 to $40 million into this company. So check it out, Newton. Captain, any thoughts before we move along?
Well, one of the biggest differences between public school and something you just aptly stated within your informational diatribe is that the size of the classroom. Essentially what they're really doing is changing the protocols on how you learn when you shrink the classroom down. 35 students in a class, what you see in public school, a lot of the students will get lost. And they will tell you that you cannot learn in a situation like that. You take a lot of those kids because they don't necessarily have money, and you stick them in private school, they might not necessarily be an A student, but you change the protocols. All of a sudden, the slower kids begin to learn. Why? Because the protocol has changed. They don't like to talk about that type of situation, but that's the reality, one of the biggest differences between private school and public school. The protocol changes with a smaller classroom. And here's Newton taking that to an exponential level. So you can learn regardless of the fact. So it's very interesting. Even though they'll tell these people that you cannot learn at all, it's the protocols that are messed up for that particular individual. So this is finding the right protocols for each individual, which will be different. So it's actually amazing. Back over to you, Sir Afflinert.
Yeah, I see that our friend Kim from Chicago, she has a great deal of intimacy with this Newton program because she just said that her son attends Khan Academy and that she says this is the Academy of Newton. So I see that it's already been incorporated in some of these school systems. I'm glad that he's going to be able to take advantage of this program. I think it's something special, and I think that the sooner we see kids of color having access to this phenomenal program, then we will see some degree of equilibrium. That's what I'm concerned about. And also, folks, I would implore you to check out one of our archival shows with the great Marva Collins, legendary educator Marva Collins, from Chicago, incidentally, as well. It's funny how Chicago seems to be the hub of things, doesn't it? You know, just all of, within the last, I mean, Chicago, everything is the chaos as well as the genius can be found out of Chicago. Maybe because it's a Midwestern city, but our president is a Chicago transplant. And I think, Urban Academy made the news last year. I know Sergio is aware of this. I believe I think it's Urban Prep or Urban Academy, where that school has had 100% matriculation rate. All black male school. See, no one talks about this. There's this whole deal, Captain. This insanity that a black folk are inferior, because it is insane. But also the fact that black, you know, the fact that some believe, or many believe, that black males specifically are inferior. But then you have a school that, when the emphasis is put there, when you put the emphasis, you get the when you actually focus on black males in a realistic way, in an educational way, you get a school that, I believe at that time, was the last year, was the number one school in the country, all-black male school that had 100% college matriculation rate. How you like me now? So although on this show we do heavy analysis and heavy criticism toward lower-tier culture, lower-tier culture and lower-tier black culture, there's a light at the end of the tunnel if we choose to see it, if we choose to pursue it. And that's something that we've got to beat down the naysayers. We've got to beat down those folks that are against political correctness. You know, sometimes you can't be politically correct if you're going to solve some of these problems. Again, you cannot be politically correct if you're going to solve some of these problems. So when I mentioned Marva Collins, who had her school, I believe she started a school in the mid-70s, she took on students that were considered unteachable. Do you hear what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen? She took on students that were considered unteachable. They were going to be written off from the school system. What she did is she dug in her heels, not unlike Wolverine. Check it out, folks. Not unlike the Wolverine. She dug in her adamantium claws and taught these students the classics. Check out the show. She goes into it and explains what she was able to do. Now, many of her students, Blacks, I'm aware of that. That's the tragedy, that her school is no longer defunct. We spoke about that as well. That's the unfortunate part. The worst thing you can do, and BA knows this, is be effective, especially as a black person. But not even about race. I've seen this cross-racially. The worst thing you can do in this country is actually be effective. So, without me pontificating, I just wanted to throw out there Newton, and there is hope if you so choose to pursue it. Now, for the last couple of days, I think we might have covered this in the last show, Captain, there seems to be a lot of discourse about the black male. The black male has been getting a great deal of press because of the Trayvon Martin tragedy. And folks understand, they listen to the show, it is a tragedy. I don't necessarily look at it the way that many black folk, or at least you're led to believe, the media does this, you're led to believe the way that many black folk feel about this thing. So now it seems that the media, they are masterful about this. Not only is the black male front and center, at least for this news cycle. But racism is front and center. And the business of racism, as I mentioned the last show, you seem to see more folks coming out, the racial hucksters, and you know who they are. I'm not going to repeat their names. Sharpton. Jackson. The racial hucksters that are out, everyone has an opinion. Bill O'Reilly has been hammering black folk as of late.
Yes,
and
sir.
To be honest with you, and let me tell you something, Captain. I wish I could go backward in time when I was more progressive, because maybe I might have thought differently about certain things. When someone of a lighter hue speaks against black folk or black culture, your knee-jerk reaction is to say he or she is an a-hole. They're wrong. We're oppressed. We were enslaved. We were under the auspices of separate and unequal. We were lynched, and we know the historical record. And to be honest and to give full credit where credit is due, the progressives are very masterful as to how they lay out the historical record. The historical record is the historical record. But where do you go from there? Where do you go beyond the historical record? That's where we, the Captain and I, that's what we are dealing with. We understand slavery intimately. We know what slavery has done. We know what it has done to the black mind. But what has also happened with the black mind is it is rife with victimization. If you consider yourself a victim, that means you never have to get up on your own and actually do something. Why should I bother to correct any issues? Because I'm a victim. So everyone has been coming out. Bill O'Reilly has been coming out. The only thing is, ladies and gentlemen, is that what he's saying doesn't really bother me. Doesn't bother me. Because 2 + 2 is still going to be 4, whether Hitler says it, whether Gaddafi says it, or whether Mother Teresa says it. Do you feel me, as they say on the street? 2 + 2 = 4 will still be the same answer, no matter who tells you the answer. So because you don't like Bill O'Reilly telling you, if Farrakhan said the same thing, you wouldn't say anything. You wouldn't say anything. So I'm going to go through a number of sound bites from the Peanut Gallery. And we're going to unpack on this issue of just what's being said out there, who's saying it. Jay-Z has weighed in. Jay-Z, Sean Carter himself. Hova has weighed in on the Trayvon Martin tragedy. He has some words to say. So we're going to cover some of these clips. We're going to discuss it. We implore the listenership to come on in if you like. The water is always warm. It's at a balmy 70 degrees. Conservative and independent style. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. First up, let's get into Bill O'Reilly. What is he really saying? And can you handle it? And is it truthful or not? This is Bill O'Reilly on Geraldo's show talking about black stereotypes. And he says to model James Brown, I don't care about your thoughts. I don't care. That's what Bill O'Reilly said. I don't care if I stereotype black people. I can handle it for some reason. Hold on.
So the Trayvon Martin case, any lessons learned?
Yeah, there's a big lesson. The lesson is that many white people are afraid of black people, particularly young black men. That's why this happened, because Zimmerman was afraid of Martin. And he saw a guy who he didn't know, dressed a certain way, and he immediately was suspicious of him. That's the lesson. And then things got out of control. So I don't want white people to be suspicious of young black men. I don't want that. But the fact is that black Americans commit homicides at a rate 10 times greater in the United States than whites and Hispanics combined. And until you address those kinds of statistics and their legion, then you're always going to have fear and you'll always have mistrust. And that's the lesson.
And so when a person listening, and, you know, we have a very integrated, diverse audience, and they're hearing you, and I think that black people are going to feel that you're stereotyping them.
I don't care. I'm dealing with reality.
And all and the white and the white folk are all virtuous?
I don't care. I'm interested in helping the most vulnerable Americans, and those are young black children born into poverty. That's who I want to help.
What about the argument that the schools are rotten in the black communities, that the services are decayed?
Yeah, why are the schools rotten? Because of the school unions. Because they won't take steps to discipline, impose discipline in the school. Every public school student in America should wear a uniform. Why aren't they? There should be zero tolerance for any disruptions. There should be standards. I mean, and they're not. I mean, they're free fire zones all over the place. Just walk into one of these schools. I used to be a teacher, I know. So look, you know, again, all I can do, I'm like Paul Revere. I can tell you what's happening. I can tell you why it's happening. But the African-American community, when it comes down to it, is going to have to do it themselves, because they're not going to get any help from the white power structure, and they're being sold out by the so-called civil rights industry.
All right, we're back. Folks.
That's what we said here 2 years ago.
But, you know, listen, what he is saying is not going to go over well, and has not gone over well with, I don't want to say all black folks, you just can't say that, but a faction in the black community are not handling this well, based on what you're seeing on the internet. When he comes out with this stuff, it's not a good look. You know, some just can't handle it. I mean, I think we talked about this before, Catherine. We've gotten to a point where we are in a corner now. We're in a corner.
Hold on, Sir Desmond. On this particular show, I said exactly what he said 2 years ago, caught flack for it, and I believe you said exactly what he said on other shows 5.5 years ago and caught a lot of flack for it. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, but it when we say it, it's big black lips saying it.
Yes.
not thin white lips.
Yes. Definitely.
That's
true.
The issue.
Definitely
that's the
true.
Issue. Just as the white man's water is colder.
The facts are the same.
Yeah, it is. Listen, we have some folks calling in. You know, I wanted to segue to Cold Sweat, which is James Brown's song. I can't find it right now. That was my segue. I don't care about your thoughts. One of my jams, actually. Maybe I'll find it. But that's what he was saying. He was doing his impersonation of James Brown. I don't care.
He nailed it. I don't care what anybody says. He nailed it. You can't refute statistics.
Why?
You can't refute the statistics.
Folks can't. How can I put this? The math didn't Obama win the last campaign with the help of former President Bill Clinton because of the math tagline? You know, the math doesn't lie. We're going to have to deal with this. Let's go to the lines. Let's go to the phones. After we deal with this call, we're going to go to, if I can find it, Cold Sweat, performed by His Royal Badness. I got to find that, Cold Sweat. One of my favorite jams. I don't care. All right, 301, welcome to the comic shop. I'm still in comic shop mode. Welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Yes, hello. This is Black Achievement. How you doing, Captain?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, yes. How you doing? How you doing, D-Bird? Listen.
Very well, sir. Nice to hear from you.
You mind if I throw out a book, a suggestion?
Oh, yeah, of course, man.
Read it at your leisure, you know, get it from the library or whatever. But there's a book out, okay?
And the title of the book is called Billionaires, The Billionaire's Apprentice. I can't remember the name. It's an Indian, East Indian woman author. I can't remember her name, but it's Billionaire's Apprentice. And it really talks about, it tries to encapsulate the rise of the East Indian population here in America. Okay? Read that book, right? Read the first chapter. Read the preface. And then, if you can wrap your mind around what black folk are talking about today in the wake of the Zimmerman acquittal, see if anything that we're talking about really makes sense at the end of the day, if we're really getting ahead. Okay? There are 43 million black people in this country, D-Bert. Okay? And I probably disagree with 42.99 million of them. All right? This whole notion of this being tribal, this one-size-fit-all blackness, is ridiculous. And when you hear people start speaking of we need to do something for blacks or the black male even, it's a hustle. It's a hustle. We need mentoring program. Why? You want a black grant now? Okay? It's all a hustle. What needs to happen? You got to ask yourself. I don't care who you are. As a black man or woman in this country, you grown. I want to know, are you competitive? Can you compete in this $16 trillion American marketplace? I don't care how Zimmerman feels about me. I don't care. I don't care how O'Reilly feels about me. The question is, am I competitive? Can I go out in the marketplace with my skills, with my credentials, and make a way for myself? It ain't got nothing to do with black people. To say black people, you're saying nothing to me. You got to add a little bit more to it, because black people don't get along. If you're a black Muslim, you don't get along with black Catholics. If you're a black Methodist, you don't get along with black Jehovah's Witnesses. Or if you're a Kappa, you may not get along with an Alpha. I don't know. We got to say more than that. At the end of the day, when this is all said and done, because it's in vogue now to talk about black men, black males. It's in vogue. And most of the time, what we're talking about with the Trayvon Martin thing, for me, it don't stick. Wearing a hoodie don't make it for me. I'm sorry. Talking about stand your ground, that law, don't do nothing for me. Because from my vantage, and I'll end here, my vantage, you talk about Trayvon Martin, what I want to know is, why didn't the police investigate it as a homicide? Why did they, the night of the crime, say, oh, he jumped you, huh? He jumped out the bushes on you, huh? You had to shoot him, huh? We believe you. That's good enough. Let's go. You go home now. That was the whole problem with me. And I'll end it right there, D-Bert. Let it go.
Thank you, B.A. I couldn't have said it any better than yourself. There's a reason why you're listening to us because, you know, listen, let's be honest. You can speak your mind here and not worry about fighting us because we're going to be honest about it. I'm like you. I don't have a dog in this race. I feel sorry for Trayvon. Seeing his lifeless body with his eyes open will haunt me for the rest of my life. But he is not unlike other youths that are dying. I'm not caught up in this brown man allegedly doing it. I'm not caught in his color because you go to Chicago, you can pile 1,000 bodies on top of Trayvon's. And we don't seem to have the same level of passion toward this one case. But like you said, this is going to be a fad now. It's fashionable to talk about black men as opposed to really getting into what is going on. What is going on with us? We see when you mention the Indians, when you mention Asians, culturally, they are emphasizing education. They're not caught up in the politics. They don't care about it. They don't even care about affirmative action. You know why? Because their test scores blow out the scale. The test scores, what difference does affirmative action mean when you're scoring higher than everybody else? Black folks used to be tracking that way. We used to track that way. That's the irony of it all. When you go back to how things used to be done, when we were told you had to be 2 times, 3 times, 4 times better than the next guy That used to be a black mantra. I don't hear that anymore. We used to be on a trajectory not unlike other folks in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. We had black graduates of Ivy League schools and from schools that you could not, you get a degree in and couldn't teach there. You could get a degree from Princeton in 1930 as a black person, but then you couldn't teach there. This is what we come from, that tradition. I don't hear anything about that now. Now I see pants sagging. Like you said, I don't care about the hoodie thing. Because I look at the police blotter, I can see 20 black men in hoodies committing crimes. And you're asking people to ignore that. Why do we have to ignore what we say? I have to pretend like the hoodie. Now you have everyone putting on a show, putting on hoodies. The NBA are putting on hoodies. Everyone's putting on hoodies. As if the hoodie isn't a problem when you see legions of black men, black and brown men, wearing these hoodies committing crimes. We are seeing them with hoodies committing crimes. If I see a white man in a pointy hat and a hood, I'm not going to pretend that he's not a Klansman. I'm not going to look past that. VA, as always, man, you're more than welcome to say what you have to say here. Don't be afraid. The water is always warm at Afternoon Radio. That's how it goes down. We're going to go to another call.
Fiery. Next call.
Let's go to another call. 626, welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? This is Covina Man from Los Angeles.
Covina,
yeah,
what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, let me add my two cents here. I think that the thing is, Bill O'Reilly, let's say that what he's talking about is true. Right, not saying it's not true, whatever. But the thing is, it's an incomplete story. What's the number one thing that white folks, since day one, has been attacking, you know, in the United States against black folks? That's the black family. They've been attacking it from the institution of slavery, the Jim Crow, or the discrimination from white-only signs. And everything, the thing that you want to bring down the people, destroy their families. Welfare, child support laws, mass incarceration, planting. What about COINTELPRO? Wasn't that an attack on the black family? Everything that they've done is to attack the black male, black family. Of course you're going to have the results. Because we had a race war going in this country for 400 years. Black folks have never fought back, except for maybe, you know, during the institution of slavery when there was a certain reaction on the plantation. Other than that, as far as free black people have never fought and participated in this race war. They don't talk about we are violent. Who had to have laws such as the anti-lynching laws? It wasn't because black folks was lynching white folks, it was white folks was lynching black folks. They say all of a sudden, well, now that they got the results, now all of a sudden the scoreboard is up on the board. They were talking about who's the champ, and people get, you know, now all of a sudden people reaction negatively, you know, generations later. What do you expect? That was the intention of all this damn lynching laws, all these damn discrimination laws, was to end up destroying your family. So now you can't walk out your own neighborhood and have any safety. They won. It's been a race war from day one. Now all of a sudden you want to play like, oh, we're the innocent people up here being attacked by all these hoodie black people. Fuck Bill O'Reilly, man. That's a racist ass. This is all about a race war they're committing on us. And nothing changed. If we get our mentality right, well, if we get our mentality right, we'll be able to say to Bill O'Reilly, F him, and when we go on this show. But they'll get some boot-licking dude like Juan Williams to go on there and nod and play a step and fetch it to the Bill O'Reillys of the world. F. Juan Williams, too. We need some real black men who can tell the story accurately. So when he comes with those statistics, we can say, here's the statistics about how many lynchings you did, cracker.
Well, Covina, listen. I hear the passion. I hear the emotion. But let's get into it, man.
Go ahead, bro.
We've gone through worse. The historical record shows we've been through worse, and we did not kill each other. It's easy to talk about the Knight Riders, which you're referencing. The Knight Riders used to be hooded white males that would take you out of your house, that would that will molest your wife, that will put a cross on your lawn. They would destroy your businesses. You know, the Tulsa, Oklahoma. We know of Rosewood. We've known of. This is what I'm talking about. This is why we're losing the excuses now. 70 years ago, we had black insurance companies, black financial firms, black banks, black doctors. I mean, we still do, but we had it as a cohesive unit because we had no choice. We had no choice but to have an internal black economy. We had no choice but to have the black dollar circulating throughout the community. But the excuses are wearing thin now. When it was worse, see, actually, it appears that you're only motivated when the quote unquote white person is your direct enemy. But now the black man is your enemy, and you don't know what to do. You're only motivated by racism. When it's other things going on, I hear the passion and pain that's going on with you, Kavina. But the reality is that the white man is not in the hood directly causing all this havoc. It is the black Knight Riders. We have to deal with that. We have to learn how to compete. And to talk about the pain, we were less violent toward each other when there was more violence levied against us based on racism. Now you and I are not living under your grandfather's form of racism. We are not. I don't think we can handle our grandfather's, our grandparents' form of racism. The excuses have to start at some point. Because we understand that there's racism, but you're not under the same level of racism that you had 50 years ago. What is your excuse? You have more opportunities now than you did 50 years ago. There's no internet in 1950. In 1950, the black family structure was on par with the white family structure. What happened, black man? This is after slavery. This is 100 years after slavery, let's say 1950. More 90 years after slavery. 1950, the black man was in your house. Not the case now, 63 years later, what have you. It's not going down like that now. The excuses are wearing thin. I'm aware of the historical record, but where do we go from here? We have to stop killing each other, pull up the freaking pants, take off the do-rags, get your Caesar cut, and get a damn job and take care of your families. Then you can get back to business. You're not posing a threat this way. If you want to go back after the oppressor, you have to be a learned, sharp individual. And being pot smoking, your pants sagging like someone who's effeminate, because you know that's why you're exposing your buttocks to the world. I saw it today going to see a damn film. When I went to see The Wolverine this afternoon, I had to pass a legion of black young men with their pants sagging down. They're not ready for the battle, sir. You're probably right, people with pants.
Yeah, this is the result of at least 40, 50 years of a economic attack on the black family. Now, it's been going on longer than that. Now, what you're saying is true. We have went through a civil war within the black community with the last 40 years, and the thing is we never recognized who started it, where it came from, and I criticize Dusty Niggas just as much as you do. But the thing is, we got to recognize and educate the Dusty dudes that the white dudes came in here and set this up. That we had an attack family. They the ones that came in and passed the laws that said about welfare. They the ones that came out and took the jobs out of the industrial Midwest and shipped them overseas. Black mayors didn't do that. Black people didn't do that. They came in and destroyed the economic base of a black community by shipping jobs out, by picking sides in this civil war. They paid black women to kick the men out the house. I will give you money if you have a kid and you don't have a man. I will pay you. And the role of the man got totally disrespected. Now, black men didn't come do that. You and I didn't go in there and say, we're going to pay these women not to start having kids. It was the white people that did that. They came in and did that. So it's like everything that you say is absolutely true. We're just not saying what the role that these white folks have in this situation. I'm not going to let any brother slide. I'm not sliding. I'm taking care of myself. You taking care of yourself, and all brothers taking care of themselves. Now, so we know there ain't no excuses because we can do that. But the thing is, we still got to educate the brothers. See, the reason why they're in a situation like that is freaking white supremacy. They came in and sat down and calculated, just like Alec calculates, come up with laws and paths. These white folks have been doing that for how long have they been having all these white think tanks? They come up with ways to destroy the black family, the very thing that Bill O'Reilly is talking about. These suckers sitting right there and came up with think tanks and destroyed it.
Well, you know what?
We don't have the money to compete. I'm going to finish this with this. We don't have the money to compete one-on-one to try to save every brother financially with what I got. White supremacy got way more money.
Well, Kavina, hold on.
Okay,
I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to go to a musical break. We're going to go to another call after the break. So call us. Hold on just one more moment. It's getting hot up in here. It is what it is. We're supposed to talk to Sergio Mims. It looks like we've gotten off track, Captain. I didn't expect it to be that way. Okay, hold on, Kavina. Let's go. Let's cool down. Let's cool down, everybody. Throw some cool water on you. Go to a quick musical break.
Motion
we get back.
Hot.
More to discuss. We have more callers. And actually, I want to play another clip. Your friend Jay-Z, who plays nigga music. He's not a gangster. I'm not going to call him a gangster. He's not a gangster musician, is he? I read this in print. What's his name? Captain. The sports commentator. We just spoke about him a few days ago. I can't recollect his name right now, but he appropriately called what Jay-Z does as he performs nigga music, and I could not deconstruct that. I could not. All right. Speaking of cool, this is Prince performing The Time's Cool, so I want folks to cool down before it gets hot again. Cool Live. We'll be back in a few moments. Performed by Prince. And listen, it's not coincidental, folks, that the discourse is heavy, so the music has to be equally so. We have about 9 minutes remaining, Captain. We have another call. Before we go to the call, I do want to play one more clip. I think we'll go with Sean Carter. You know, he represents today's youth, although he's in his mid-40s. He he seems to – well, you know, listen, I'm not going to hate on that. But it just seems that we're following some folks over the precipice. That's half the problem also. I appreciate Kavina's passion, but I'm beyond all that. I believe we've had it worse. We were actually enslaved, if you remember. We were enslaved, and we're still, you know, we're not slaves anymore. It's time to rise, black man. We understand. We know about white supremacy. We know what that is. But we can't be the odd man out. It appears we're the odd man out. Everyone else, there's other folks that share our hue. There are Africans that are coming over here that are excelling. The Indian man is passing spelling bees and practicing math. Come on now. Enough already. I'm just saying, and I'm not disputing the facts. But can we stop killing each other? Can we stop perhaps giving our children's name like Trayvon and Lakeisha so they can get hired? I'm just saying. All right, this is Jay-Z on Trayvon, and we'll open up the lines. Hold on.
You know? What were your thoughts on Trayvon? I know you was immersed in the case and was watching a lot of it and stuff like that. Like, what? I guess you were still in London when the verdict came in and stuff like that. Like, talk to me just your emotions of what.
I was really angry. I didn't sleep for 2 days. You know, I was really angry about it. That, you know, the thing that we all knew, it was still a bit of the racism in America, but like, you know, for it to be so blatant was like, if you just ask the questions, ask yourself the question, didn't Trayvon have a right to stand his ground? He was being chased. He was being chased, and he fought back. You know, he may have won. That doesn't mean he's a criminal. He won. I mean, if you chase me and you try to attack me and I defend myself, how can I be in the wrong? How is that right? You know, this guy went to get some Skittles and go back to watch the All-Star game. He had plans. I'm going to get this Arizona and get the Skittles. I'm going to go watch the game. You know, he probably had his whole position, everything. He had no intentions of robbing anyone's home. You know, so, it's a thing where it's like, again, a reminder of we still got a long way to go. And it's beautiful because this generation right now, you know, this generation, they don't see color in that way. You know, we're a bit removed from those racist feelings, because again, you know, it's hard to teach racism when your child is, you know, our clubs is integrated. Yeah. The music we listen to is the same.
We went to the JT show.
Exactly. You know, all our feelings, you know, and our anxiety.
All right. You know what, Kathy, let's go to the lines, because you have so few minutes left, and we'll have to pick this up again on Wednesday. But I'm going to try to go through these calls quickly. And let's go to 916. They've been holding on for quite a bit. 916, welcome to Afternet Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Gentlemen, it's Big Sexy and Fat. And
yes, sir.
I
what's
am
up,
now,
man?
What's going on, guys? And it's funny because I'm actually in D.C. to do the NFL agent certification exam, and the writer you're talking about on the Jay-Z thing was Jason Whitlock. He wrote
right,
that piece.
That's right. Jason Whitlock. That's correct. Nigga Music. Right. Okay, so your point.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought I lost you for a minute.
Okay.
I want to follow up on what Black Achievement said. It's, you know, it's about competing. You know, people, we as black people and people in general have to look in the mirror and ourselves to do better. It is easy to play the role of flunky and ghetto, ratchet, whatever word phrase you want to use. That takes no skill and no effort. It takes effort to break away from that mindset and do something for yourself and do the work and face down all the naysayers. And that's how I roll. That's how you guys roll. But for some reason, that is in a popular mindset, and I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And, you know, to reference the time, the black community is going to have to do what Jerome has been doing for Morris Day for 25 years. Pick up the mirror and put it in front of your face. That's what we're going to have to do. And we seem to be reluctant to do it. Because once we talk this way, you're called a sellout, and they don't want to hear it. But it's always
exactly. Listen,
no matter how bad things are, okay, ultimately, you're not going to get that apology from the white power structure. It's not going to happen. We're still waiting for an apology. While you wait, let's see if we can get some education going through. Let's see if we can create an internal black economy. We are tired of being the one man out. We're the one man out. Everyone else, every other ethnicity has the ability to circulate and recirculate their monies. Trillions of dollars go through the black community, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, as far as the kind of money that we spend, it's astronomical for a black community. But it's not being recirculated. Whose fault is that? Everyone else can do it, but not us. BS as always. I got to go to another call. We got about 3 minutes. We'll pick it up again on Wednesday. BS, hold on.
Definitely.
Thanks for your words. 703, a couple of seconds, couple of minutes. 703.
It's Bicycle for Life, real quick. We say we got to repair the black family. Okay, what does that mean? First, we got to get back to, you know, if we make a child, we marry the woman, and we take care of the child we make. We got to stop giving a platform for black dysfunction. And I agree wholeheartedly in regards to black businesses. I think we need to really look at the model that African immigrants and the West Indians who come to America who are excelling academically beyond native born black Americans do. Because saying black America, that's a broad term. But I would definitely like to hear, you know, from those West Indian brothers and African brothers, what do they have? What is pushing them that we are leaving out? And with that, I'll hang up and talk with you next week. Great show.
Well, we got about 2 minutes. I know the Catholic can probably answer that best because he is of Caribbean extraction. But I tell you this much, having lived with Caribbeans and have friends and everything, is that they were part of the triangular slave trade as well. But historically, the master was an absentee master. Do you follow me on that? The master lived with us and continued raping us. I mean, they did their share of raping in the Caribbean as well. But they went back to England. They didn't necessarily stay around. They were essentially absentee masters. If you're an absentee master, you have the ability to have some autonomy. There's more autonomous thinking in the Caribbean community than there is in the black American community because of the cultural aspect of it. That's one of the things that's going on. But the Captain might be able to speak more succinctly. We've got about a minute, Captain.
Well, it's based on one of the principles of Marcus Garvey. You don't leave somewhere to go somewhere else to do worse than what you were doing. Right off the top, right there. That's what gives them the advantage. You come from the West Indies, you come here, you're automatically looking to do better than what you were doing over there. So that gives you drive and determination. So there you go.
All right, folks, it's been real, it's been fiery, it's been After the Radio. We will pick it up again. We'll table it again, folks, for Wednesday, always keeping the fire going. This is the Savage and Sincere LP. We'll be right back on Wednesday. Thanks again.